Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. While getting ready to speak to my guest today, I found myself reminded of the Kevin Smith 90s slacker classic Clerks, which Smith filmed after hours at the actual convenience store that was his place of employment. That burst of youthful creativity paired with geographic angst led to a lasting entertainment that still resonates with disaffected youth and one-time disaffected youth alike. Ali Spaltrow did much the same thing at Bart and Greg's DVD Explosion in Brunswick, Maine, where she worked the 3-to-11 shift before breaking out her instruments and writing songs until dawn, the same way her Air Force father had throughout her childhood at home. A self-taught instrumentalist, Spaltrow has the evocative voice of a singer with experiences and wounds beyond her years, which makes her music alternately peppy and sad, broad and focused.
You with the night that holds my gaze. You with the tongue that speaks my name.
Spaltrow has put those overnight efforts into a burgeoning career in Brooklyn under the stage name Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. Her debut album, Ripely Pine, is out now from Bada Bing Records, and it's a pleasure to welcome her to the Roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Ian. Thank you.
Who is Lady Lamb the Beekeeper?
Well, the name came to me in a dream when I was keeping a notebook by my bed when I was 18, right around the time I was starting to make music. And working at the DVD store, I really wanted to be able to share my recordings with my hometown. The local record store was right next door, and I wanted to put the recordings at the counter for free, but I didn't want them to get traced back to me using my name. So anyway, I was keeping a notebook by my bed, and I was trying to train myself to write lyrics in my sleep because they were keeping me awake. And Lady Lamb the Beekeeper was written in the notebook when I woke up one morning, and it was right around the time that I had about 12 recordings ready to go, and it just felt like the perfect thing to slap on the CDs and put at the counter as a moniker. And I really can't say where it came from. I don't remember writing it. I even went about my day, about 5 hours into my day, before I checked the notebook to even see if I had written anything in it. If I had to say that Lady Lamb was a character, I would say that she's like a Victorian sort of character in my head. And I've even given her a first name. Her name is Adelaide Lamb in my mind.
Now, I want to go back to something you just said. We'll get back to Lady Lamb in a second. But you said you wanted to have it be not traced back to you when you put your music out. Was there some fear involved in releasing these songs that you've been working on? Or was it more just to keep your anonymity for people who came into the store?
It was a little bit of both. My town was really small, and the rental store I worked at was such a central place. I feel like, I mean, everyone in the town rented movies there, and it was right on Main Street. And working there for so many years, you get to know a lot. You know, you get to know the people that live in your town, because making music was such a sort of strange thing that I started doing that just seemed to come out of nowhere in my life. There were certainly nerves surrounding, what am I even doing? What does this even sound like? You know, I hadn't even sung before that. So I was really nervous about how it would be received. But also, like I said, with the town being so small, it was just a thing of putting my email address on the CDs in case anyone wanted to reach out to me, but wanting to see if I could do this mysteriously and kind of gauge the reaction before feeling more comfortable with sharing it openly.
Did any of the customers figure out it was you?
No. In fact, I only put 11 or 12 copies at the counter. And interestingly enough, the one person that reached out to me ended up being my best friend and bandmate for a year and a half. He was in Westbrook, Maine, which was quite a ways away, and was on a random drive that day, had never been to Brunswick, picked up the CD, reached out to me, we met, we really, really hit it off, and then within a few months, we were making music together, and that lasted for about a year and a half.
you're attached to the term self-taught. What was that process actually like, and why did you start in the first place to get involved in music?
Well, you know, growing up, there was so much music in my household, and now looking back on that, it makes perfect sense that I ended up the way I did, even with the music that I liked to listen to, which was so influenced by my parents. But I was so stubborn, and so I would never let my dad teach me anything. And I guess I'm proud of where I came from in that. I'm really lucky that I grew up in a house full of music, and I'm proud of the determination that it took and the commitment it took for me to just sort of sit down and decide that I was going to do this on my own, and then, you know, get to a place where I could play an instrument. And, you know, I don't read music or anything like that, but I'm content with what I've learned, and I'm continually learning, and it's just an exciting process in my mind to teach yourself to do something, the commitment it takes and the, you know, perseverance it takes to really stay focused and continue to work at it.
Reading your background, it makes one wonder about, you know, why you didn't become a movie director being around all those movies all the time.
That was actually something I was also really interested in high school. And I actually made a few films and little short films and wrote a full length with a friend of mine in high school one summer, and, you know, was really, really into film editing and photography. And that is what I was actually going to go to college for in Chicago had I gone. But I deferred, and I deferred for a year, and in my gap year was when I started making music, so that when the year was up and it was time to go to school, I just, you know, was too invested in what I was doing.
What's the music scene like in Maine? I mean, what was it like to start out there?
The music scene in Maine is really tight-knit and really supportive. There are a lot of bands out of Portland that I think are absolutely phenomenal. And making music in Maine, in the area where I was such a nurturing environment. It was, you know, my rent was affordable, and so I had the time. I wasn't grinding too hard. I felt really relaxed, and I felt like I had the time and the space to work. And, you know, a lot of the bands that I really like in Portland have, you know, bigger apartments than we do in New York, and they have basements, and so they have practice spaces, and people really just have the time to commit to their art. And I don't think that I would have turned out the way I did had I not started in Maine and had those years to figure out what I was doing and really spend time on it before coming to New York, where now I don't have a practice space.
Just looking at the credits in your album, I mean, you had a lot of people working with you. The songs you wrote and arranged, but you had a lot of instrumentalists. Did you find that Brooklyn, you know, was a necessary step, was moving there? This is obviously one of the places where music's happening and has been for a long time. Did you have to make that move away from Maine?
I felt compelled to make the move, mostly because I had spent what I considered to be, you know, enough time really in the scene in Portland. And the unfortunate thing, in my opinion, about the music scene in Portland is that it's in my mind, it's a well-kept secret. It's pretty hidden, and it's in a bit of a bubble, and you have your press outlets and your newspapers and stuff within Portland, but then beyond that, there's really not much, you know, it's not like Boston or the rest of the country is paying attention to what music is being made in Portland, really. So I felt like it was just the natural progression for me to sort of move south and move to a bigger place where I could be more recognized. And I waited until I felt confident in my abilities and I felt like I could really handle it. And, you know, luckily had a really good support group here. And I really feel like it was the right decision. I love living in Brooklyn, and I find it to be really stimulating. And I've, you know, written a lot of material here, and I really think it's conducive to what I'm doing.
Of course, you have to play live, and the arrangements on your album are sometimes quite complicated, but when you're playing out, you're mostly solo with a guitar. So how did you envision what the live aspect of that would be now that the album is out?
You know, to be honest with you, in my mind, the performing live right now and the record are pretty separate things. I have put together bands for each city for my release shows, which are just Portland, Maine, and Boston, and New York. I am perfectly happy to continue playing solo, and I don't feel that my time playing solo and touring solo is up. I've actually only been on one full U.S. tour, and played, you know, a ton regionally, but I really want to keep performing on my own. And I realize that the record is entirely different, you know, than that. It's very fully arranged, but I'm really confident that people will be okay with the record being what it is and the performance for now being just me. And I think that there's something to be said about both, and that they can work on their own and also connect. You know, if someone is seeing me solo, they will still, I'm hoping, still get the record and really enjoy it and understand why I did what I did. You know, I really felt that these songs warranted more instrumentation than I could give them live, but I think that the live performance can stand alone.
Love me best in an airplane. I slept the length of the Atlantic. When I awoke, we had landed for days on end. I thought about it.
In this area, we don't have movie stores really left. And just in my lifetime, I'm a few years older than you. You know, it's all moved to the web. It's gone to Netflix, and people have any number of ways of watching movies without going out to get them. So I wondered, you know, if you had come along maybe 5 or 10 years later, how much influence the actual location you had back in Maine had on your development as a singer and as a songwriter? Because if you didn't have that movie store, if the web had wiped that out as it has so many others, would there have been a physical place for you to become the musician that you became?
That's a great question. I really think, as scary as it is to think about, I really believe that the location and the setup was exactly what was necessary for me. I don't know. I might have gotten creative and found another basement to sing in, but it wouldn't have been, you know, 0.4 miles down the road from my house, and you know, it would have been a trickier situation, I'm sure. What really it came down to was me being able to have time, even though it was late at night, but to have time to be really, really loud. So I'm sure that I would have found a spot, but it's true that the initial location for starting to really sing was in the basement of the video store. So it's difficult to say whether I would have done the same thing starting out in my bedroom or something, you know. It's an interesting thought.
Do you have a list of recommended rentals?
I have a couple. My favorite movie is Paris, Texas. It's this 1984 movie by Wim Wenders. That, for me, is a really important one, and one that I recommend a lot. And I also used to recommend this movie, Junebug, with Amy Adams.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's a fun one if you're kind of not sure what to get that night and you want something not too depressing but really, you know, well thought out. I really like that one.
We've been speaking with Ali Spaltrow, Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. Her debut album, Ripely Pine, is out now from Bada Bing Records. Ali, it's been a pleasure to have you on the roundtable, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. The pleasure was all mine.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.